Welcome to Eureka Street Crypto. This is my anti-professional crypto channel. I'm just a barely sane dude who fell down the cryptocurrency rabbit hole. This channel is my fumbling attempt to communicate myself outside my own head about my journey in the crypto space. It is basically my brain dump. None of this is actual financial advice. Good morning, everybody. I'm Eureka John, and you're at Eureka Street Crypto, broadcasting live at 5:39 in the morning on a Wednesday, and it is December 15th, right in the middle of December 2021, and I'm broadcasting from Leander, Texas, just a quaint little suburb outside of Austin, Texas, and this is my morning show, my brain dump, aka video blog, and it just kind of tracks the progress of everything that I learned about crypto along the way. I'm not sponsored by anybody, and I'm really not trying to shill anything, but I do talk about projects, some that I hold, and then things that I'm interested in and that I like, and stuff like that. So, that's what it is. That's it for the intro. So, let's move on over here to CoinGecko and see what the market looks like today. So we have still going on a grabby market. So you have the bull market, which is everything blowing and going up. You know, graph is green, you know, looks good and all that stuff. And everybody's excited and elated. Euphoria is the word that a lot of people tend to use for it. And then you have the bear market, which is the hibernation. Everything's in the red. Everything's sad and depressing, and it's the crypto winter and all that stuff. And everybody's, you know, scared, basically, because they've basically put their house on hawk and everything like that. And then you have a crabby market, which is kind of where we are right now, where everything's just kind of going sideways. And it's kind of a... sometimes you almost prefer like a bull or a bear market, even a bear market, to a crabby market, just because a crabby market is like a lot of uncertainty. You know, you don't really know what's going on. You know, it's kind of like, it's like the kid standing off at the edge of a diving board at a neighborhood swimming pool. And he's just sitting there and like, and you're just like, just jump, you know, like. No matter what happens, you just want it over with. So, yeah, that's a crabby market, and we are in the middle of a crabby market. So Bitcoin's at $48,357.86. Ethereum is at $3,873.11. Let me make sure the mic's on. Okay. Binance Coin is at $528.50. Tether is $1, stable coin. Solana, $166.37. USDC, $1. Cardano, $1.26. XRP, $0.81. Polkadot, $26.05. And the Doge up in number 10 at $0.18. And I know I've said this before on some of my shows, but let me just explain the concept of a stable coin really quick for people that don't know. Stable coin is the point, it's not a dollar, but it's pegged to a dollar. And it's the point at which people go in and out of different cryptocurrencies. So think about stablecoin like Adult Swim in a pool. All right. So you have all the kids splashing and playing around and, you know, splashing each other and just causing complete pandemonium, playing sharks and minnows and Marco Polo in the pool and stuff like that. And sometimes you get a little baby Ruth floating around in there. Okay. But things got to chill out for a second, and things can get pretty volatile on that. So the lifeguard blows the Adult Swim. And that's when everybody gets out of the pool and they sit on the side for a second. And, you know, they go get their French fries and their candy bars from the concession stand. But it's basically an Adult Swim time. So whenever you are in the market and you're playing around and things are getting all crazy, sometimes when things get really volatile, you pull things out and you put them into stable coins and put it on the side of the pool. And it gives you some time, one, to cash out, and to kind of reevaluate how you want to jump back in and which tokens and which projects you want to jump back into. So that's kind of how I see stable coins. They give you a place to pull in and out without actually leaving the premises of the neighborhood swimming pool, aka the banks. So you don't have to cash out and make it like some kind of, you know, super obvious. You know, I know I'm not a tax expert by any means, but you don't have to make it some super obvious taxable event where you're withdrawing into your bank account and then waiting for the processing time. It takes like about a week a lot of times in order to do that from exchanges. And yeah, it just turns into a real pain in the ass and a nightmare. So stable coins give you a place to kind of sit on the side of the pool for a while before you restrategize what you wanted to invest in. So it's always good to have kind of a little my bag of stable coins. I got my bags, fill my bags, it's always good for you to have a little stash of stable coins on the side, just in case you see an opportunity and you can jump in instead of suddenly after being like, trying to figure out how you're going to, jump into a project and moving things around. Anyway, so that's a little tangent rant thing. let me scroll on down. Let me see what projects have I really been looking at. I've been, looking into Ohm a lot. I've been dealing with that. I've been hanging around the sushi swap farms and pools for quite a bit recently, and then putting into various different liquidity pools over there. I've been on the Avalanche blockchain, and I've put into the Time token and Wonderland.money. I put some stuff into the KlimaDAO and taking advantage of that high APY right now. Let me see what else. And then the MGH DAO, one of my favorites. I kind of found this super early, and I've gotten to be friends with some of the people over there. And I guess I'm kind of an advisor on that project. I don't know, but either way, it's a really cool project, and it deals with the metaverse and real estate there. And let's go to their website real quick, and it allows you to basically communally own some plots of land that the DAO has bought, and they make DAO decisions to buy land on certain platforms. Like right now it's Sandbox. It could be expanding to Decentraland and other platforms pretty soon as well. But they've been investing collectively in land there. And then, you can swap it. So you can become a liquidity provider, have access to the data ecosystem. They have land valuation tools on there, NFT pools, and stake your NFTs and enter the world of Metafi. They're building out all these metaverse finance type of applications. And it's really interesting to see, obviously as Facebook has grown and become Meta, and they're trying to grow into the metaverse ecosystem, it's provided a lot of public eyes facing the metaverse. And so a lot of these projects that were previously kind of obscure and small are now garnering some attention. So they launched, I guess it was maybe early this year, somewhere around there. And they started out their project, and it's grown very rapidly. And they've set up Chainlink node for their land valuation tool. They've been partnering with Ocean Protocol in order to put the land valuation data that they accrue up onto the Ocean Protocol marketplace. It allows people who, have you seen the price of the land in MGH and in the sandbox and stuff like that? It's insane. It's like a minimum of $13,000 to buy a tiny little swatch of land in the metaverse. And I know a few episodes back, I went through and I reviewed some of those plots of land, so I'm not going to do it again. It allows you through this land valuation tool to go through and put in your token ID, and it uses some algorithms, some AIs, Chainlink, Oracle, the node to be able to figure out, comps around the land around it in order to be able to figure out the value of your land. So it's kind of a more objective NFT valuation device rather than just using floor price. Because if you go onto OpenSea and you look up a project, for instance, I recently bought a CryptoTitties NFT, or if you go to Rainbow Rolls or something like that, you'll see a floor price. But that's not really an objective or a reliable way to value NFTs, just merely by floor price. And that floor price is like the value of the lowest trading NFT at that moment. Here's a tool that does this a little more objectively, and I could see this expanding out into other types of use cases. So anyway, the MGH token allows you to have governance and then say in the DAO. And then from there, you can jump in to join the NFT pools And yeah, so those are coming soon. That's not quite out yet. But now they're moving on to the staking mechanism stage. So they've launched you can stake the MGH tokens on the Polygon platform, layer two platform. And here's a little bridge, and it's cleanly integrated into their website. Let me make sure all this is coming up well on the screen. Okay, yeah. So it's pulling up here, but it just pops up a little bridge, and it makes it really convenient, so you don't have to go over to QuickSwap yourself and go to several multiple sites. It allows you to do it right there, and that APR is 40.6% right now, which is really good. But starting tomorrow, I believe, or today, they're going to be bringing in staking on the Ethereum platform too. And right now with Polygon staking, you can put it in and pull it out as you see fit really quickly. With Ethereum, it's more of a long-term hold. So let's go take a quick look at one of their recent blog posts. As of this morning, I believe, 10 hours ago, they're in Portugal. Written by Camilo Echeverri. He's one of the co-founders. So the time has come to stake your MGH on the Ethereum network. We are ready to present what you need to know about our staking mechanism. So main MGH staking points. Staking on Ethereum will be bonded, meaning that the pool will have a lockup period. There's a 7-day deposit and withdrawal period for each pool. This is to prevent, little measures like this help to prevent rug pulling. And rug pulling are when people en masse suddenly pull out and leaving bag holders and people like that. It kind of helps to slow that process if that happens. So the first epoch will have four pools available to stake in with four different locking periods, 3, 6, 12, and 24 months. The length of each epoch includes the deposit duration. The plan was to initially offer three staking pools, but the community decided to add an additional one. MGH is a project by and for the community, so we are happy to announce that the fourth staking pool will be called Hong Long, the proposal creator. The APY will depend on the amount of time you commit to locking your tokens. The longer you lock them, the higher the rewards. Makes sense. The rewards and staked MGH will be claimable at the end of each epoch for every pool during the 7-day deposit withdrawal period. The staked MGH rewards will be automatically restaked if not withdrawn, resulting in that compounding effect that we all like so much. The APY of every staking pool can be adjusted by governance proposal because it is a DAO. And then the HODLer, DGEN, and 8 pools will start opening December 15th at 2300 Central Eastern Time. Is CET, is that what that stands for? And I think that's about, that's like 11 o'clock there. It's like maybe in a couple hours here in Central Standard Time US. I don't feel like busting out the world time buddy or anything. somewhere around there, like in a few hours here. The Hong Long pool will be open 1 week later on December 22nd at 2300 CET. So yeah, if you are wondering about the APY, the Hong Long pool, make sure to join our Discord because they haven't really had that active of a Discord, but just recently they've really been firing it up. They've been one of those projects that have traditionally done more of their stuff on Telegram, but Telegram has just been, I know Discord's full with a bunch of spam bots and stuff like that too, but Telegram is just like rampant with them. So I'm really happy to see them go over to Discord. I think it's a good move for them. So here's some of the detailed mechanics about that staking pool. 3-month bond, APY 45, DGEN 6-month bond, APY 75%, and then the APE bond is 100%. So yeah, and then it shows, the instructions on how to go stake it. So yeah. Pretty cool, and they're doing a good job on their website. And it's kind of, to me, like watching a nice little plant grow is watching this project develop as it goes along and the partnerships that they've made, with Chainlink and with Ocean Protocol. I mean, just a couple days ago, they sat there and had an open forum on their Discord showing how to set up a Chainlink node. And then everybody got to watch the process of them setting up the Chainlink node. So I thought that was pretty cool. I couldn't jump in. I kind of listened in for a second, but I couldn't really jump in because I was doing some family stuff that day. But overall, I think it's really cool that they're just, everything is completely open. Everybody, it's a very horizontal DAO. I think so. So that's that. Let's move on to some other topics. I ended up doing some research on some things with the Metaverse. So since the Meta Game Hub DAO is focused on the Metaverse and land in the Metaverse, it got me thinking about some of like the legal implications of the Metaverse. You know, you have property ownership and stuff like that. Let me go to a couple of these articles that I've found that, that bring up some interesting topics. So for instance, okay, global Metaverse, it could be worth $280 billion by 2025 and likely grow from there. So pretty much if you're sneezing anywhere around the Metaverse right now and you're an early adopter, you're probably going to do well. Not financial advice or anything, but, you know, I'm just saying, I don't know, you know, like if you... I don't. So anyway, all I'm saying is that there's a lot of different takes. You know, I had somebody comment on one of my BitChute videos that I posted to BitChute about the Metaverse, and I had I think it was some lady telling me how the Metaverse is like Satan's playground and stuff like that, and we're all going to be locked in, you know, Matrix style battery pods, you know, being slaves, being locked in the Metaverse, and you know that's a very dystopian outlook. Maybe prisoners in the future will just be sedated and put in pods and be put in the Metaverse for life, you know, maybe, you know, but I don't necessarily like to think in those terms of 100% dystopia and negativity about everything. I think that, you know, humans naturally try to find a healthy balance of things. And if something is going 100% one direction, no matter how virtuous it was at the start, it ends up in oppression and slavery. And then it's human nature to try to break out of that mold. And there will always be cracks and leaks in any type of objective certainty of one or another type of direction. So, but people say there's no limit to the type of activities that will take place on the Metaverse, nor are the lines between them exceedingly clear. That said, the core capabilities that users can look forward to: socializing, shopping, working, and gaming. So you'll basically be able to do a lot of different stuff in the Metaverse. My question has always been, you know, if everybody's going to be in the Metaverse, who's going to clean the toilets, right? Unless it's all automated, you know. And I've mentioned before, and I did with the interview with Philip Silva and Humpty Calderon, you know, what if in the future we're all living on passive income, and those who have, you know, bought cryptocurrencies and staked them on the proof of stake networks are earning that passive income, and then everybody else who didn't will receive some kind of UBI. That can be very dystopian, right? And then we'll all be slaves to a centralized UBI system. So it's really important that we learn how to control and have sovereignty over our data, because if indeed later on data becomes the most valuable resource, as it's tending to become now, hence the whole MGH land valuation tool that takes that data and puts it on the Ocean Protocol marketplace, if that becomes our main source of sustenance, being able to own our data and sell our data as necessary to the proper entities, then hopefully we won't be coerced into selling our data in order to survive, to people holding us at gunpoint. Yeah. But that's it. But that's a kind of a beautiful thing and almost poetic to think about. For instance, you hear in preschool, you know, Bible camp and all that stuff, you know, you are unique and individual. God loves you just the way you are. You know, you know, there is no other human being like you. You know, little songs and you know, stories whenever you're in preschool and kindergarten about how unique you are and, you know, and amazing you are. And that's great. You know, we all are. Then that's absolutely true in a way. Our data is absolutely unique. Everything that we say, do, interact with, transact with, everywhere we go, accrues data, and no person has the exact data collected, you know, or data trail as anybody else in this world, period. It's impossible. Not even identical twins have the exact same data collection around them, you know, around their spirit entrapped in this body, you know. And so that data, no matter what you've done, ethically, it's not a positive or a negative, you know, so it's not moral, you know, but no matter what you've done, that data has value to somebody, to something, you know, so you can sell that data. And then now the mechanisms are being developed and put into place. And even through AI, if you look at Fetch AI and all their autonomous economic agents and stuff like that, collecting that data and utilizing it and trying to help people streamline it or control you, that data has value. And so you can be able to sell that data and live off that data. And that's why data privacy is of tantamount importance. So as we roll into the metaverse, let's look at some of the legal implications. So whether humans interact in the universe, multiverse, or metaverse, as soon as human behavior, let me make sure this is pulled up good on the screen. Okay, so let me actually change this view so I can zoom in and you guys may be able to read it better alongside me as well. So, okay, as soon as human behavior, okay, occurs. As soon as human behavior occurs, one has to ask what laws apply and which body should set the policies and defines the rules. Whether there are humans, there's imperfect behavior, right? You know, that's a classic theology right there. Humans are not perfect. Can the virtual world where interactions are taking place regulate fraud and prevent manipulative practices? In a decision rendered on Friday regarding VanEck's spot Bitcoin ETF proposal, I don't know when this was written, but they just create a timestamp right there. The SEC rejected the idea, you know, withholding approval of the application unless and until a surveillance mechanism can be put into place. To allow the regulator to deter and sanction market manipulation, right? Because it's all for our own good. We got to stop those money launderers. Given the number of transactions involving human interaction, freedom from fraudulent transactions cannot be assumed. Our policymakers have insisted that surveillance be required. So they want to surveil your data. That's why it's important to have sovereignty over your data and to have a legal structure in the metaverse that will allow that sovereignty. The law is also a step behind technology, as technology by definition develops more rapidly, with legal norms following in reaction to the development. Of course, the metaverse will have legal implications. One issue will be collaboration and interoperability among different metaverse creators. If the purpose of the metaverse is to allow people to interact in a digital world, each metaverse should be accessible from all devices and headsets. So this is a hardware issue, right? This may involve technology companies having to agree to specific standards for a metaverse so they can interoperate among different creators. Or each company will have to comply with the technology constraints built by its predecessors and license the rights to use another company's underlying technology to build its metaverse. And you see this in every single industry. You know, I come from industrial automation, petrochemical, flow measurement engineering type of industry. You know, I grew up in Houston. My dad has always run a flow measurement instrumentation business in which he's manufactured products that help to measure flow. Well, there's the ASME and ISA standards, and those are standards organizations, and supposedly they are not connected to any one particular company. So whenever you're creating industrial commodities and stuff like that, you have to follow some certain objective engineering standards that supposedly can't be influenced by any one corporation at all. They are industry engineering organizations, and they write standards that everybody has to go by. Well, what will be this standards organization that rules the metaverse, right? And then when you're talking about hardware devices like Facebook and the Oculus glasses and stuff like that, who creates or the graphics card drivers, and who creates the hardware that will be compatible across all different metaverse platforms and studios, graphics studios, and everything like that? And what organization is going to be the one that creates the standards and the common ground which they all go by for collaboration and interoperability among different metaverse creators? So these are some important questions that are being right now fleshed out. I mean, I don't know the answer to them. I'm not deep in all this industry, but I'm thinking about this stuff. Because it's important. Whenever you have something new come into place, you have to have some kind of structure, some framework, some protocol within which to work that is not ruled by any one particular entity or organization or corporation like that. It's to prevent monopolies. So another issue will be intellectual property ownership. A recent artificial intelligence case in which the U.S. District Court of Eastern District for the Eastern District of Virginia, East Virginia, West Virginia. So I guess that's around Washington, D.C. They held that an AI system cannot be an inventor on a patent. Unlike U.S. law, patent law, copyright law does not have an express requirement of human owner authorship. However, U.S. courts and the U.S. Copyright Office generally operate based on this requirement and deny registrations of works not created by humans. You never thought that this would be an issue. You're like, my dog, he created this amazing doghouse door device, and it's not me, it's a Rufo's, door, So in fact, the compendium of U.S. Copyright Office practices, a manual produced by the U.S. Copyright Office, intended for use primarily by the Copyright Office staff as a general guide to policies and procedures such as registration, deposit, and recordation, states the term authorship, in quotes, implies that for a right to be copyrightable, it must owe its origin to a human being. Okay, so material produced by nature, plants, animals, they're not copyrightable. How does this go into genetic engineering, genetically modified food, GMOs, golden rice, for instance? You have Monsanto that created the golden rice in the early 2000s. And what was happening is they were growing it in India, and then maybe the wind blew some grains of rice over to a neighboring field that might have just been owned by some small farmer. Suddenly that farmer is growing that golden rice in his field, and Monsanto can catch that and come over and claim it and say, "What are you doing? You can't grow our golden rice." And the guy's like, "I didn't know I was doing it." And then suddenly Monsanto takes that person's land, right? It's predatory behavior. That's kind of something produced solely by plants and animals. And that, so these are the little nuances that we need to watch for to prevent from happening. But anyway, so back to the idea of something not human, not being able to copyright something. The metaverse could have virtual creations by avatars and AI aspects built into them, right? So such innovations are deemed AI creations and not human creations. They may not be allowed certain types of intellectual property protection. It makes me think of that project Aletheia, I believe is how you pronounce it. It's basically the Greek word for truth, .ai. So let's go over here real quick and I will show you this. Aletheia.ai, and it's basically an NFT project that allows people to kind of take all their social graph and everything that they've done online and encapsulate it into a bad gateway. All right, so hold on, let me just see if I can just do a search for it. And it takes all their data and their data trail, everything that I was talking about before about what makes them unique, and it plugs in them into an NFT, and then that NFT is hardwired in with some AI that kind of creates a personality online that somebody can interact with. So say, your spouse died, right? And you could create an NFT of all the photos, all the Facebook posts, everything that they've done. You can upload their poetry, whatever you want to do, and you can upload it into that AI engine, and that AI engine will create an online persona for that person that you may be able to chat with, speak with, interact with, or whatever, and it will be an NFT. Aletheia AI presents Noah's Ark. It's an intelligent metaverse that aims to preserve and evolve the culture and collective intelligence of the humans, right? So it takes all that data and it uses AI to preserve and grow that in a way. So at what point does that start to drift away from the original person that originally collected the data? I don't know, but it's just interesting. And so that brings back to this, the whole idea of copyright and patent law and stuff like that. The metaverse could have virtual recreations by avatars, and it makes me think of Alethea.ai and AI aspects built into them. If such innovations are deemed AI creations and not human creations, they may not be allowed certain types of intellectual property protection. So say, you know, for instance, you know, Doris, you know, she dies and, you know, she's no longer in existence as a human, but she's uploaded or you have uploaded everything about her. And then the AI has kind of taken over. And what if that AI ends up creating new content in the metaverse? You know, is that AI protected for the copyright stuff if you were to use that? Or is that copyright infringement? I mean, how is that all approached from a legal standard or even an ethical standard at that point? So yeah, interesting questions. I don't have answers to any of this stuff. So yeah, the metaverse could also pose issue for content owners, as it will be difficult to police copyright infringement. So content licensees will need to carefully review their license agreement to ensure the right to use licensed content in the metaverse. Many license agreements did not consider the use of licensed content in such forums. So think about this, like for instance, you know, YouTube has the built-in, you know, copyright claim engine. You know, yesterday I played "Put My Hand Up on Your Hip, When I Dip You Dip We Dip." You know, that's a song, you know, and BMI and ASCAP and all those, you know, CESAC and all those music licensing and royalty agencies. And then when I posted it up, that little tiny 10 second snippet that I posted, you know, got a copyright claim on it, right? And then a lot of times YouTube will just silence out those parts and stuff like that. They have mechanisms built in to protect copyright infringement. The metaverse does not. Of course, I'm sure Facebook and Meta now will in their metaverse, that will be one of the first things they do is build in those mechanisms. But that will start like, I guess, a precedent, you know, and then some regulatory government agency or somehow will come in, world government will come in and try to regulate all metaverses in that way. So another implication of, you know, I wouldn't say the need, but the argument for surveillance and centralization of the metaverse. That, you know, it's like we all, like I said before, you know, humans, you know, go towards something that they consider good. But at some point that what they consider good tends to solidify on the outer edges. And then it starts to, in a way, sort of squeeze everything in it. Well, the harder that it gets squeezed, then cracks develop. And it is human nature to seep out through those cracks and try to do something differently. You can't contain humans for long. Especially once you start to squeeze them. So, so the metaverse could also pose issues for content owners, as it will be difficult to police copyright infringement. Content licensees will need to carefully review their license agreement to ensure the right to use licensed content in the metaverse. Many license agreements did not consider the use of licensed content in such form. The above are just a handful of legal issues that the creation of the metaverse will pose. Other vital issues, such as data protection and privacy, will come to the forefront immediately as each develops and more people begin to interact. So we're coming back around to the whole idea of data protection and privacy, which at the very beginning, we talked about surveillance and them wanting to bring in surveillance to stop money laundering and all this stuff. Of course, the SEC rejected that Bitcoin ETF proposal because they want surveillance mechanisms in place. And that's always what the government wants, is surveillance mechanisms. They want to make to watch out for the bad actors, of course, for our own protection. Right. So there's tons of legal issues surrounding the metaverse. This is a topic that is extremely fascinating to me. That's kind of why, circling back around to Meta Game Hub DAO, why I jumped into it and the whole idea of owning property in the metaverse, collectively owning property in the metaverse as a DAO, being able to stake that, being able to have fractionalized NFT property holdings in the form of MPT tokens in the DAO, through Meta Game Hub, fractionalized land. It's all fascinating concepts to me, and that's what keeps drawing me back to this project. So anyway, yeah. Thanks for watching. This is my spiel for today. Later today, I'll be interviewing Chair from Rainbow Rolls and that NFT project, and that should be a pretty fun interview, as we all love a little potty humor. At least I do anyway. I'm dumb and dumber, right? So, all right. Well, I will talk to you guys tomorrow, and yeah, I always have something going on for sure. So take care. Don't forget to spend time with your real life people and people that don't know anything about cryptocurrency, about the metaverse, about DeFi, about NFT, and because that will kind of put you back in your place, because you can kind of consume yourself with all this stuff and you get all worked up and anxiety ridden about the market and everything going crabby and sideways. Just go do something with people who absolutely don't give a crap about it, you know, and then that will put you back in your place and realize that it's really no big deal. All right. Well, I will talk to you later.
Thank you for making it to the end of this program. If you actually like this content, give a thumbs up. And if you want to hear more, just hit the subscribe button. I'm available on YouTube, Odyssey, and BitChute, and on all the major podcasting platforms in audio version. Spotify specifically. If you would like to follow and leave a review, that would help a lot. I am also available on Twitter at EurekaJohn1. That's EUREKA John, JOHN, and the number 1. My DMs are always open. Feel free to shoot me a message. If you would like to donate some stablecoin or Ethereum, please feel free to send it to eurekajohn.crypto or eurekajohn.eth. This will help with the gas costs for all these protocols that I mess around with. Because that gas adds up and I ain't rich. Yet. Thanks again.